Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 60, the big 6-0, on Tuesday, the 30th of August, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And you're back, thank God. And it's normally you who has to do the single shows, the solo shows.
Yeah.
But no, because of internet not working where you happen to be last Tuesday. Wednesday, in the end, but because it wasn't working, I was forced on my own because I couldn't even drag in poor Richard
no.
Gooding, who has manfully stepped up on a couple of occasions now to help me out.
Yeah, it's it's a cracking job. Thank you, mate. I do really, really appreciate that. It was a good one. I finally got around to listening to it today in the car, actually. So yes, I'm still a week behind with my motoring news, which is fun. It's going to be a challenge tonight, but never mind. We'll get there on the way through. So, shall we start off with some follow up?
It seems like we can only start with follow up these weeks.
We can, yes. Well, that's good. It means that, you know, there's a thread,
yes,
or something like that. but I was last week. I was in the middle of La France Profonde. With absolutely no coverage, and funnily enough, the first story is all about France. Financial Times reported the other week that three members of the French Commission that the French Environment Ministry had set up to investigate some of the vehicle pollution from Renault cars have allegedly said that actually key findings were missing from the final report, and it has been muttered that there is the possibility that the French government has gone easy on Renault, partially because of its 20% stake in the car maker. So that's been muttering around. For the French Environment Ministry's point of view, it has denied quite categorically that it has admitted these key elements. Renault recalled 15,800 captures, Renault captures, in January to try and fix pollution control systems, and it's also offering voluntary emission system updates for about 700,000 vehicles. But I couldn't possibly believe that the French government would be protective towards French businesses. That's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, ever. Or something.
Well, let's be fair. There have been a few organisations that have suggested that perhaps the governments where... the home governments of manufacturers who have approved or passed vehicles for emissions and NOx emissions, and miles per gallon is perhaps not the wisest way to be moving forward.
possibly not. So this isn't
just a French problem.
No.
Or potentially a French problem.
It's not l'exception française. Yeah, it's quite widespread, but yes, that one there popped up in Financial Times. So that was via it was a Reuters story via Automotive News Europe, just for reference in there. As ever, links to all these things will be in the show notes.
But also we did, because we discussed this in January when the raid first happened. But also, don't forget, in April, PSA Group were raided too. But we haven't heard the response back on that. So it would be interesting to see if people involved in that report are equally curious as to why key findings are omitted.
Yeah. Well, it was three people who had been on the committee doing the investigation that supposedly were saying this. It'll be interesting. I imagine if that was 3 months after, so that was January, April. So I imagine it'll be another 4 months before any of these reports, before a PSA report comes out. Yeah. And the reason I'm adding an extra month to this in is because of all the summer holidays and August and stuff.
And the Paris Motor Show. And
a Paris Motor Show, 1st of October.
Is it?
By the way.
I thought it was going to be sort of early September with all the teasings.
Yes, yes. Well, I checked it out this afternoon because I thought, should we start talking about Paris Motor Show things?
No.
Which is why we're not talking about the new Citroën concept tonight, by the way.
No, exactly.
Not just Will.i.am's horrific Tesla.
No, don't talk about that.
But no, that's why we're not talking about, because I thought, oh, if it's the next week or two, then we'll talk about Paris Motor Show stuff. And I looked, and 1st of October, so we're definitely not talking about Paris Motor Show stuff yet.
No.
We shall save that up.
Yes, quite, quite.
More follow-up, Andrew, and more pollution-related stuff.
Dieselgate!
It's mine. We're getting over it nice and early tonight. Yes.
Right, one of the things that happened with Dieselgate was if you, the dear listener, will remember that dealers in the US got a little bit miffed that Volkswagen was getting them to sell cars that Volkswagen, in inverted commas, knew were had defeat devices, and yet the dealers did not. So they have they were suing Volkswagen, and there has been an agreement with 652 dealers. Compensation will be paid within 18 months, but this doesn't include the buyback affected vehicles and all that sort of stuff.
No. Neither have they come to an agreement on. They've said, okay, we'll pay compensation. Now they've got to knuckle down and work out what that compensation is. That hasn't been decided yet.
Yes, because things I saw being mentioned was that dealers had forked out a lot of money to improve or upgrade their showrooms and all the rest of it just before Dieselgate broke the surface, and so people have made big investments into their, you know, they put a lot of money into investing in their setup, and yet they are struggling to sell vehicles on the back of this. So they've effectively thrown money down the tube. So, yes, we will update in due course when we know what figures are being mentioned, but at least I think this is another one of those moments where Volkswagen's internally gone, just whatever, just get it, just say yes, we will pay whatever because we need this to go away.
Yeah, exactly. Next up, I flagged more follow-up, and it's new pictures showing the Land Rover Discovery almost undisguised, according to Autocar and Mark Tishaw. And the reason I flagged this one isn't because it's in any way a surprise to me, because these almost undisguised prototype discoveries are more disguised than the ones that I saw a few weeks ago. When I commented on it again in the was it one of the solo shows I did?
No, you mentioned it to me because
it was to you. Yeah, so it was it was a few weeks ago when I spotted one Sunday morning on the M6, which was less disguised than the ones in these pictures here, and sadly, my views still hold. That it's just a bit wet to be a Discovery. Well, I mean, I saw a previous generation one today, actually in full AA livery as an AA van, and it looked fantastic.
I have as well. In the last week, I've seen one being used, and I thought, my God, that's a very expensive AA vehicle for starters. That's what first approached my mind. But then I thought, It looks cracking. I mean, this is, and I totally agree with you, and I'm backing up comments I made at the time.
Yeah.
And now I've actually seen pictures of this, I'm really, really disappointed in this, because it is an inflated Discovery Sport, which I have now, since I've had a couple of weeks in the countryside a few weeks ago when I was on holiday, I've seen a lot more of now. It just seems to be my little corner of the the UK has not gone Discovery Sport mad, but everywhere else has.
It has, yes.
And I think as a Discovery Sport, it looks great. It's great. It's well proportioned and all the rest of it. But I think the Discovery itself was its own entity. I think it was its, not its own brand. And I understand that Land Rover are trying to have the Range Rover and the Discovery brands, and I don't object to that, because, you know, who am I on this podcast saying, no, you don't know what you're doing, Land Rover, making more and more money and selling more cars. But I think they've missed a trick with trying to make everything look the same. Because I think the Discovery was a very unique vehicle in that market, because it really stood out. You knew exactly what it was. Or you always knew that that's a Land Rover Discovery. Even if you want to use the Discovery name now for that wing, I think by having Discovery across the front of the bonnet, you have made the statement enough. I don't think you have to make everything look the same. And, this is not just a Land Rover problem. I have this issue with
Mercedes.
Most manufacturers at the moment, that they have got their nose and grill, and that gets shoved on every vehicle. And it's now gone to vans. Mm-hmm. And the problem with vans, and I've said this before, is it looks awful on a van. Trying to stick a car front on a van, it doesn't work. Please stop doing it. By having your logo on the front, that tells everybody whose the car is. You don't need to do the headlights, the shape of the grill, the form of your daytime running lights, you know, all this sort of stuff. That doesn't need to happen.
There's only one manufacturer that succeeds when they're doing that, by the way.
Go on, because I've got an opinion on this as well. Go on.
But there is an exception that I can think of from that already, and that's actually, I was going to say it's Mercedes-Benz. The exception being the rebadged Kangoo. Citan. Is it Citan? Yeah, Citan, the rebadged Kangoo at the bottom of the range there, the little one. But all the rest of them, I feel that Mercedes-Benz remains the only car manufacturer that seems to be able to do that. The thing is that I've just held it up as the example of how not to do it for its car range. But when it comes to the between passenger and commercial vehicles, Mercury, I believe, is the only manufacturer that can do it properly.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. But going back to this. Sorry, because we digress.
Yeah, going back to this. Sorry, we're digressing hugely already.
When you and me actually talk to each other again. which is why it's not a 20-minute podcast episode this week.
And this, by the way, is not the start of the conversation. Yeah.
I think it's as you said, it's bland.
It's just really dull, and I feel that right at the minute, that with introducing this and having no Defender in the lineup, the utility on which the Land Rover brand is based, it will be completely missing. The fact that the current generation can be this luxury this lovely plush vehicle that you could turn up anywhere in, okay, or it can be an AA van, with equal success. Is absolutely amazing. I think that's fantastic. I don't think that this next generation will be able to do the same. I just don't. I love the fact that there is a Range Rover brand. I think that's great. I love the Disco Sport. I think it looks great. I think that this is starting to stretch it, the whole thing, a bit far. And I just don't know that whilst the team that's the design team at Land Rover, who are behind the work on the Range Rovers and stuff, I don't know that they should be the same people who are behind the more utilitarian part of the brand, which I feel needs to the more rugged part of the brand, which I feel always needs to be there.
Well, I think we're
going to have to move on in a minute.
I know we are in a minute, but I've gone through some of the picks on the Autocar article, which will be in the show notes. And if you look where they're testing in the black and white camouflage.
Yeah.
The heavier camouflage. If you look from the rear, you look at that rear window and that incredibly small space that's been cleared by a wiper. And I know this is a test vehicle and all the
rest of it. That's not fair.
That is not. That is not a discovery. When you look on the same page, and it's got the auto car current discovery car, and you can see that they've, you know that on the back of that's got a massive wiper that clears a large area of a large space of glass.
Yeah,
I think the discovery was very successful because it enabled families and people who wanted a bit more of a plush. But I think utilitarian is a...
Utilitarian doesn't quite cover it, because that says... That
implies that, doesn't that it's cover a workhorse. And it's not necessarily a workhorse, but it has the capability of doing more rougher stuff than you would consider doing in a Range Rover or Range Rover Sport or something like that. Yet the insides of them are lovely. But I think what helps is the fact that there is masses of glass.
Yeah.
Having used a vehicle recently of a similar size with lots of glass, it's such a rare thing to drive. And I think it's I don't think it will sales-wise be a mistake, but I think it is a mistake for Land Rover to go down a more smaller windowed coupe, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, just an inflated Discovery Sport, which I don't think is what a Discovery is. I think they're two.
I agree with you.
Two different vehicles.
Yes, agreed.
Anyway,
totally. Shall we move on to some new news?
We could try.
You should try. Well, I put the next one for you because this one's all about security.
Ah, yes.
Stuff. So I'm going to let
Hang
you
on a moment. Let me just break out my tinfoil hat.
Yes.
Face it on my head. But, this is from Ford. We've mentioned, I think it was last week I talked about this, but how vehicles are being stolen through key fobs, through people using... readily available, actually, and quite cheap transmitters and stuff to pretend that they are the key from keyless entry cars, because most people leave their keys by the front door, so, you know, you only need a limited amount of space to, you know, there's only a limited range that you need to overcome to trick or convince a car that actually it's in your pocket when it's just a range extender. But Ford have come up with a way to get round the key fob by radio button passcodes, is what's being suggested in this radio show article, where you will stick in a passcode, obviously, you know, it's many numbered digits, whatever. You know, we're going back to stuff that was out in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
With cars.
Yeah, I remember you could set an immobilizer code on a E30 BMWs. That you could do it via the, if you had a one with a little trip computer, you could actually set number code as well. And Citroëns did it as well, didn't they? Citroëns and Peugeots, so you could put in a little digit keypad. So basically Ford are attempting to patent one of those. It's worth reading because it's a bit of a laugh. I don't know how practical it actually is, because first of all, you need to get into the car. So some of the things that are mentioned in this article by Andrew Kroc, assume that people have already managed to unlock the car and get into the car, and then you've got this extra level of stuff to do.
Yeah, and when they say, sorry, when I'm saying passcode, we're talking about you're pressing different parts of the car. So you're talking about, you know, suggested things are that you are talking the radio control button, the brake pedal. It's been a long day.
Only if it's a Citroen SM, yeah.
Yes. I don't know, my dad's CX had some fairly mad things.
I was about to, I said that and then I thought someone's going to say, well, you can actually get it on a CX to DS as well, you know. And now somebody will come in and tell me it was on the GS too.
Yeah, we're waiting for Dolly Wobbler on that one.
Yeah.
But you can set it up so, you know, so it could be that your accelerator, it could be your windscreen wipers, it could, you know, you can, the suggestion is it can be configured to however you like it to do. So it sounds a bit like with Android phones, you can do a swipe in a particular way to unlock your phone. So it sounds that sort of thing, that you hit this certain prescribed order of certain bits of the car. So, it sounds more complicated, but it's less complicated because you're not using another device. You're using the devices already within the vehicle, so therefore that's the sort of thing I like. I know I sound and no, I
it's
come
too
across
factor. It's
that I'm very anti technology and I'm anti connectivity and anti, or you know, so anti new developments. I'm just against unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can use what we've got already to help and enhance or make the driving experience easier, or utilize what we've already got in there to help, then I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's two-factor authentication, but it's not requiring a second device.
Hmm.
Because you've got something you have, which is a key fob, and then something you know, which is whatever the sequence is. So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It could be fun. I think it could be an interesting one. Therefore, do decide to pursue it. Next one is that this weekend that has just passed here in the UK was a bank holiday.
Worst traffic ever.
It's going to be Carmageddon. Sorry. Yes, that's what happens every time there is a bank holiday, every time there is a public holiday here in the UK, is everyone predicts the worst traffic that has ever hit the world, ever, ever, ever. But it wasn't helped this week because Friday, wasn't it? Must have been Friday.
Saturday.
My father's coming up the road. Saturday. Last Saturday, there was a bit of an issue on one of the main motorways here in the UK.
Bit of an issue?
Yeah, I'm getting to it.
Is
the M20. actually, there was a serious problem when a lorry struck a bridge and knocked a chunk of the bridge out. And of course, blocked a major motorway, the one that goes from London out across Kent, that little sort of foot at the bottom of England, and towards Dover, Calais, Channel Tunnel ports and stuff, which is super busy last weekend. Trust me, I sat at flipping passport control at Calais for 2 hours on Thursday night. It basically, a truck knocked a chunk out of a bridge. And which landed on top of another truck and a motorbike that the motorcyclist managed to jump off at and miss it. The reason I'm talking about it tonight is that what's happened is I've actually left half the bridge there. So the bit that was standing is still there and it's still kind of hanging out over the bridge. There is a fantastic article on crbd.co.uk, which is basically a blog all about, a site and a blog all about the British motorways. And it's really, really intriguing about, A, how they can leave that half of the bridge there, and it's all to do with the way it was built, what happened, and everything like that. Huge kudos, the other reason it's being mentioned, is huge kudos to the Highways Agency. Now, the Highways Agency here in the UK are in charge of the main roads across England and Wales as well. Not sure if it's Wales.
I think so.
Definitely England. Possibly Wales, but who cares about Wales?
Oh, God.
Oh, sorry, that was an easy one.
Oh, no.
Now I'm in trouble. But they managed to clear it up fantastically quickly, get the carriageway open again. Absolutely.
Considering
great
what
job.
Happened.
Considering
was,
what happened.
It was very quick.
It was very quick. Everything all checked out and opening, was it under 12 hours or something? It was pretty good. That sounds pretty harsh, but they made a fantastic job of cleaning up and very quickly getting the M20 back running again. But there's a really interesting article.
Just over 24 hours.
Just over 24. Yeah.
That's still really quick considering what happened.
Yeah, considering there remains half a bridge hanging over the road. Because of the way the bridge was designed, actually that half bridge is more stable now than it ever was when it was complete, because it's actually holding less load, which is quite interesting. Have a read of it. If you're in any way interested, have a little bit of a read of this page. It's well worth it. It's not about cars, but it is all about the infrastructure it runs on and what happened, why it had the rest hasn't collapsed, and what's going to happen next as well. So definitely worth 10 minutes of your time, folks.
I think one of the most interesting parts of this is, Alan, why you know there is a website dedicated to the motorway infrastructure of the UK.
I know because actually the link came. I saw the link on Twitter.
Your
link
Honor.
On Twitter, and it came, Your Honor, and it came from. And the person who linked to it was it was Hilton Holloway. It gets the credit for that one. I know that he has it for a long time. He had a motorway junction as his avatar on Twitter. He's got a real thing about highways and especially some of the ring roads around London, and also lost motorway junctions of the UK. There is another website dedicated to that, which is motorway junctions that don't exist. What they should have been, why they should have been, and that in some places on motorways in the UK, you will notice that junctions are missing. Bottom of the M1 being a prime example. There was a junction missing at the bottom of the M1, which has since become London Gateway Service, I believe. There you go. I'm never sure if I need to get out more or stay in more when it comes to some of these things. Can we move on, please, before I dig a bigger hole for myself?
Okay, right. I will be kind enough and move on. This is something I saw from Automotive News in the US, actually, that Amazon have now launched a vehicle research portal over in the US, which I felt was interesting because, as we know, anything that happens to Amazon in the US does filter down and feed into us third world countries like the UK, the rest of Europe and stuff like that. And I thought that it was very interesting that Amazon are moving into cars. Now, at the moment, it's only about helping you research a new vehicle. So it's things like the model changes, the model strengths and the model value. And then there's an overview. So it sounds very much like a what car review or an auto car or something like that. You know, something that we in the more motoring corner of the internet are used to. But by sticking it on Amazon, it makes it much more prominent to people who don't necessarily go and check out Top Gear or Car Magazine or all these others.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the first step. What's the next step? Is it that they're going to sell directly?
Well,
is it that what are they? Are they going to tie in with certain manufacturers? What's going to happen?
So they've already tied in with certain manufacturers. So they've already partnered with Hyundai Motors America, and they have already got a program which is here called Prime Now, Drive Now. Which ran last weekend. It's going to run again this coming weekend, I believe. And basically, via Amazon, if you live in Los Angeles and Orange County, California, you can book 45 to 60 minute test drives via of the Hyundai 2017 Hyundai Elantra via Amazon, and they will deliver, they say, to people's houses, to their offices, or even to their local coffee shops, so that you can then take a test drive of the 2017 Hyundai Elantra. So that's the next step. The step after that isn't mentioned at all anywhere in this article. And it's quite, and I think it's quite curious, because Amazon are moving into cars now, and as I'm sure many of our listeners are aware, there's a lot of news and there's a lot of warm-up for the Grand Tour coming up, which of course is going to be on Amazon. Available at Amazon Instant Video, Party Prime subscription, and that starts to get into cars. And then the next step from that, and I'm not sure how much the two are linked, okay? So there could be a gap in my reasoning.
So here, you're saying this is your supposition?
My supposition, yes, right. Is that the is that it could move into I've now had a complete mental blank, Drive Tribe. The new website, which is being set up by Messrs. Clarkson Hammond and May.
That we still don't know what it means.
Which we don't necessarily know what it means.
Except for there's lots of people have been approved as tribe leaders.
Lots of people, including myself, have been approved as tribe leaders, yes. Some people are, there are some journalists who are being taken in as tribe leaders as well. Some of those were released. I don't have any of the information in front of me, so I can't remember right now. Has been announced, but nobody else really knows quite what it means yet. So some of us signed up out of sheer nosiness, and also because we got a little bit sick of seeing tweets by other people saying how wonderful it was that they were trackers. So yes, that's that. I wonder if that is linked in any way, shape, or form, or if that's just coincidence, or if it's not as linked as I'm making it out to be just there. Not sure.
I'm not as convinced that the Clarkson, Hammond and May link is going to have as much of an impact on that. One of the things I have seen recently is, and I can't remember which manufacturer it was, that they're tying in with Amazon's, is it Alexis? Is their voice?
Alexa.
Alexa. Is their personal assistant, as these things are being sold to us. And it's very poor of me not to remember which manufacturer it is, but there is one of them out there that's made a big song and dance, or Amazon and them have made a big song and dance about how they've tied in together. And on tech podcasts that I've listened to, the Alexa voice recognition software and understanding is one of the better, is the best one out there from what I've, and this is from my particular set of podcasts that I listen to or people I read. These people agree amongst themselves that Alexis is the one that does the best job in dealing with you day to day.
So a very quick internet search. It's Hyundai's luxury brand Genesis. Seems to be. So that was
okay. So today. we can see
stuff. Yeah.
Obviously, that Hyundai are cozying up with Amazon very closely. They're tying up on many levels, which is that's fine. That's no problem at all. I mean, we can that makes sense. If you're going to go with someone, you might as well go all in.
Ford and BMW as well, by the way.
Okay, I'm not surprised about BMW following the presentation we were given in January.
No, me neither.
Should we move on?
Yeah, we shall.
In less than
very,
half an
very
hour.
Quick. Yes, very, very quick one this time. BMW, the BMW Z4 has been sort of very, very quietly, has been, basically its existence is practically ending. They're basically quietly ending manufacture of the Z4 with very little hurrah in any way, shape or form. I noticed I can still configure one. I configured one last night on the BMW on the BMW UK website. So I don't know how long that will still be around. But according to German publication Bimmer Today, which we spotted via Jalopnik, then basically the production closed down last week. Z4 has always been a kind of funny car, as far as I'm concerned, because it's neither as outright sporty as a Cayman, not a Cayman, a Boxster, or even a Cayman. On one hand, and nor is it the sort of got the Boulevardier Tourer kind of appeal of an SLK at the other end. So it's always been sort of sat there in the middle, with the fact you could either get it with a 1.8 litre or a 3.5 litre engine. It's always been a bit odd. And it costs as much as a Boxster as well. So.
Yeah, I think I always thought this was quite a handsome car. It's not for me.
Yeah, it's the best looking of the small.
It's a soft top, it's not for me.
It's a hard top.
Everybody knows I don't like soft tops generally.
It is a foldy hard top this generation, mate.
Yeah, but okay. Sorry. Foldy hard top on this one. But I do think it's quite a handsome car, but they just didn't show it any love.
No.
Really. It's not, they didn't push it like Mercedes push their two-seater cabriolets.
No, it was...
Whoever they're aimed for, you really know they're aiming for them with Mercedes. And the BMW, that they moved on to the many, many configurations of two- and four-door, back to two-door, then maybe back to four-door model range they've gone for.
Yeah. Yeah, I
and this is
you.
Just... I think somebody's turned around one day and gone, oh, God, we still make this. Oh, no, we didn't mean it right. Stop it now, quick. It seems that sort of thing. It was happening in a different shed on a backfield and everybody forgot about it. And then they've suddenly remembered and gone, oh, no, come on, stop it now. No, we don't mean this anymore.
I think it was US built. Certainly the original Z3 was. So it was kind of easier for BMW to forget about it than maybe some of the stuff that gets built in Germany. Or in or across Europe, so yeah, always been a funny one there. Lots of rumours about what's going to replace it, and those rumours tend to centre around the BMW Toyota partnership, with the Toyota version being definitely not called Supra, but possibly called Supra, and its replacement being. Z5 or similar. Apologies if you just heard a motorbike go past.
Everybody heard a motorbike go past.
Yeah. So there is a replacement in the line, supposedly, allegedly. We'll find out what it is at some point. Possibly at next year's German Motor Show, which I think is Frankfurt. So that's coming along. Should we take a quick pause for a moment? That was not the moment of pause that I was meaning just there. Feel free to edit that out.
Good God, no, I'm leaving that in. No, we're professional, honestly. Ladies and gentlemen, we're professional.
So, anyway, we love that you think we're professional. And if you would like to support this professional podcast and as best as you can, then the best thing you can do to support us is to go to iTunes or go to your podcast player of choice and acknowledge our professionalism and our awesomeness with a review and a star rating or a thumbs up or whatever it is that your podcast player lets you do in support of us. Doing that should only take a few moments of your time. What it means to us is absolutely huge, because it all of those kind of things influence the charts and the impact we have, and thus the visibility we have on all of these podcast players. The more visibility we have, the more new listeners we get, the more chance there is that we can turn around to manufacturers and say, well, actually, we have quite a lot of impact. And that means that we can bring you new, more and better content. So your little 5-star rating, your little thumbs up on your podcast app can mean the world of difference to us. That would be absolutely fantastic. And of course, if you've already left a rating, if you've already left a review, then please don't forget that you can achieve the same, if not better, effect for us by maybe showing a mate, explain to a mate what a podcast is, explain what we're all about, and showing them how to subscribe and rate themselves, which would be fantastic. So thank you so much, those of you who are already rated and left reviews. Really, really appreciated. Those of you who keep meaning to do it, there is no time like the present. So I think that's our word from ourselves.
Yes, that's Andrew, our, shall that's we move our plead back? And
That's our plea nag. For the yes, plea and nag for the week is now done. Tick. Get that one off the list. And Andrew.
Yes.
Autonomous vehicles.
Yes, there was. As regular listeners know, we do like Formula E on this show. Mm-hmm. We have friends of the show who are involved in Formula E. And we've been, which has just finished its second series.
Yes.
Season or series. I don't know what the proper terminology is here. But they were having test days at Donington last week. Mm-hmm. But people might remember that it has been muted to have in conjunction with the Formula E races, a robo race, which is autonomous vehicles racing around the same tracks.
Because right at the minute, there's no support races for Formula E, and that's what they're hoping to introduce. Support race.
Yes. And so what happened last week on the 2 days is that DevBot. God, people really need to think about names here. DevBot was fitted to a vehicle, and that was used to test round Donington's track. To start getting the drivetrain, the sensors, the computational system, communication technology all up and running and really going in a track environment. Mm-hmm. So whilst people were testing out the new gearboxes and batteries and all the rest of it, this would happen to be chugging along as well. So I did see on Twitter few current race drivers express their not overly positive views, I think is the polite way of putting it, over having autonomous vehicles race.
But this is like asking a London cabbie what they think of Uber's Uber's autonomous taxi testing. You know, instantly there is the fear that it could put them out of a job.
Yeah, I mean,
of course they're not going to love it, but
no, yeah. This is something different. I think I totally understand when people say, but you're not going to get the same feeling from humans racing around a car, around a track and all the rest. Yeah, no, I don't think that's what this is. This is not trying to replicate that. Mm-hmm. I don't think autonomous racing is meant to be a replacement for humans racing around a track in incredibly complex vehicles. I think this is a way of increasing the development of the technology and letting the wider public know that it's not actually as scary a concept as it could be.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think it's a marketing thing.
Oh, yeah. And it's about letting people get used to the idea of autonomous vehicles. It's like, look, they've been racing in this race series. Look how
it does 150 mile an hour around this corner and it doesn't crash. Oh, that might be quite safe then.
Yeah, and of course that, and by stress testing the technology like that in a in you know a, a
It's a controlled environment, isn't it?
Yeah, a relatively controlled environment. Yeah, relatively controlled environment, then it should accelerate the development of this kind of stuff in the same way that that's exactly what Formula E is for. Formula E is there to accelerate the development of electric vehicles.
Hmm.
Okay, that's one of the reasons why it's not all about the aero, and that the aero is the same on all the cars. All the cars are the same outer, because they wanted to focus. You know, sure, they can tweak every, you know, everyone can have slightly different setups, but it's different setups of the same pieces, because they wanted to make sure that the teams focused their efforts on the drivetrains and not on the aero. And this is a similar idea here with Robo Race.
Yeah, and I think if you have similar people involved in the PR and marketing side of it that have been with Formula E, where you look at how Formula E looks to actively engage fans with the fan boost, and you know that's just a little trick. But I think the way they do things generally is much more engaging, particularly if you stick it up against Formula One. Which I don't think is a fair comparison, but if you do stick...
And Formula E do not think that that's a fair comparison, because they're definitely not trying to replace Formula
One. No, not at all. I mean, this is, again, these are separate entities doing different things, but because they have similar sounding names, people go, oh, it's a replacement. No, it's not meant to be a replacement. It's never meant to be a replacement. It's a different perspective. And it's a different way of looking at things. And that's the way to look at it. I mean, like, you wouldn't say that World Rally and Formula and British Touring Car are the same. No, they're not trying to out-compete each other. They're different perspectives. They're both recognisable road cars, but they're different perspectives. One is to... The World Rally Championship is taking them through to some of the most extreme conditions a car will ever go through, whereas British Touring Car is telling you how strong the wing mirrors are. You know.
Oh, yeah. Yes, totally.
So I think it's... it's okay, I was being a bit facetious there, but I'm really interested to see how the DevBot moves on, and how this autonomous racing or the robo-race actually ends up in real life. Because I think it could be very interesting, particularly with more and more... people who watch racing, who have grown up playing racing simulators on consoles and computers and stuff like that. So, I think it's a very interesting step, and I think it's a good step, particularly when you look at how the general public need to accept autonomous vehicles, and this is a good way to educate many, many people who aren't necessarily as lucky as you and me to get in a car that has certain elements of autonomousness about them.
Mm-hmm.
And the first experience they'll have it is watching a car go around a racetrack, rather than sit in the driver's seat and go, hang on, this car is steering me round the corner on a motorway.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been lucky enough to experience.
Yeah, and survive.
Yes.
Yeah. DevBot's a funny little looking vehicle, though. It's a bit of a hybrid, because it's essentially the drivetrain and layout of these new robo race cars, but with a driver's compartment as well. Right at the minute, just in case, but also so that it can learn and that people can feel how it's going. It's really cool. Excellent. Excellent article on Automotive Engineer, Automotive Engineer website. So, well worth a read, well worth a look through as well. That is a particularly good one in there. Oh, and we're staying with racing.
Well, I know I mentioned British Touring Car.
You did,
racing, didn't I?
You did. That's why I sort of sniggered along there. It was just quickly wanted to point out that I'd been at the Touring Cars at the weekend. As those of you who follow us on Twitter and Instagram no doubt are aware, judging by the number of pictures I put up. Quite a fun weekend at Rockingham. I was there for the Saturday and got absolutely drenched, but thankfully left before the tornado. And I'm not joking. And then back again on Sunday with some friends for the full day then as well. And what an excellent couple of days out it was. Really, really great. Touring cars and Rockingham are always a good show, and it's great how close we can all. Oh, ding! It's great how close once again that such a visible and high profile race series lets you get to the thick end of the racing and how much you get to see and how much you get to experience really over the course of the weekend. I should point out, by the way, that this, when I'm saying it this way, I'm not saying it like I did at Formula E where I had, you know, where I was very kind of the guest of Qualcomm. This time I was pure pleb at the touring cars. So absolutely brilliant. Really enjoyed it. Loads of close racing. I mean, the qualifying was quite well. It basically was taking place in apocalyptic conditions on the Saturday afternoon, which is when I decided I was just going to go home because I'd taken some pictures in the dark. And
you had your canoe with you.
I almost had to have, but basically I was worried that the insides of my camera were going to get washed out. And actually on the way back from Rockingham to my house, which is a distance of, maybe less than a mile, I did at one point think that the car was going to float away because the puddles were much deeper than I thought. And then Sunday, fantastic conditions for the three races and also for the support races, the Ginetta Juniors, the... The other generators. I'm wearing noise cancelling headphones, and I could hear that. The other generators, the Clio Carp, and the Formula 4, which were there as well. All great races. Nice folk of Rockingham, and a great day out. So
I always feel sorry for Rockingham on the telly, because the way the camera angles are, it makes it look as though there's like two men and their dog watching. And I know there's more because I've seen your pictures. And I know there's always more people because they're picking on the... Because when it goes to Rockingham with the touring car, it goes on the inner circuit, doesn't it?
So, yeah, it doesn't just run the four corners that make up the oval.
No, yeah. You know, so, I mean, you obviously, you've got a couple of those and then it comes back and does twisty bits. To make
the
it,
so international sports car circuit, if anybody is it wants to know which circuit it is.
Technical yes. terms, yes, okay.
Technical terms,
the twisty
yeah.
bits. Yes.
The twisty bits in the infield. Yes. Yes.
But I understand from a camera point of view that they are focusing on those because that's where a lot of the action will happen and all the rest of it, but it always does come across. It's not like it's Oulton Park or Snetterton those corners are where all the audience, all the crowd are, because they're not in the other bits.
Yeah. The thing about Rockingham, okay, is that the pit and the humongous main grandstand and everything are all at one side. The pits and the inner paddocks in the middle of the track, the middle of the oval, and that's like a third of the way across. And anyone can get into there. Okay, you can get in into the inner paddock, you can wander around, you can watch from down there, you can take photos from around there. But the grandstands are on the outside edge, and the reason that that works at Rockingham is... I'm sorry, mate. The reason that that works at Rockingham is that from the grandstands and from all those places, you can see the whole track.
Hmm.
It's all there so that you can see because it's purpose-built.
Mm.
So whilst it looks like there's nobody, because it always looks out over Gretton and Dean and out across Rutland, then it looks like it's, you know, in the data centre that's behind Rockingham and stuff. So that's the view that you always get. So it looks like it's just nothing. But then the other way, there are thousands and thousands of people, for touring cars, thousands of people filling up the main grandstand, filling up all the sort of halfway up stages, filling up the roof of the pit building, and filling up. On Sunday, they had the other big. They had one of the other stands open as well, so it's filling that up too. So, So yeah, loads and loads of people. All these people getting in my way at my circuit. How dare they? Yeah. Good. Good.
Right.
Really enjoyed it. There's pictures and there's like three lines. And then some pictures on the website, motoringpodcast.com. If you go to the blog section in there, you can see it. You can also get it if you follow us. Search for Motoring Podcast on Apple News, then we also appear on there in beautifully rendered fashion. So there's pictures on there. There's a link in the article through to even more pictures, because I just chose my like favorite 16 on there. And then there's 127 or something on there. And then there's about 1,400 on my laptop here. So yes, I took one or two pictures over the week.
Right, should we move on to the next bit, or maybe our listicle of the week?
It is very much a listicle this week, yes. There are only five on it. And this week's list of the week comes from Motoring Research, and it's by Andrew Brady, and it's five ways to save money on a new car. The reason this one's up is because September is nearly upon us, and that's the new plate change. And if you can fit in buying a car between now, or agreeing a car between now and the 1st of September, then good luck to you. But there's kind of five key hints.
No pressure on me to edit this, then.
No pressure on the editing there. He did write this on August the 25th, so even then. So if you can manage... There are five key points that Andrew points out, and I'll let you go to the article itself to get the detail. But the first one in his list is to buy the outgoing model. Of course, there's a number of models that are on the way off the forecourts. Really, we've talked about the BMW Z4 already, so there may well be deals on that. But other things like previous generation Renault Megane Coupe, for example, may well be on your list, that's the kind of car that you should be heading for.
Yeah, because they're not going to be a bad car, are they?
No.
It's not like the... for some cars it's a mild refresh. For others it's a brand new model. But they're not going to be... The last one is not going to be awful. So...
No, not at all. Especially not if it's just a mild refresh and a facelift or something. Yeah. No. You'd be just fine with that. Next one is to sell your Part X car privately. These days, it used to be in the olden days you could wander in and you would get a better deal if you had a Part X. These days, many Part X's, especially if they're not the brand that you're looking for, that the dealer is selling, they're just going to put it to auction, so they're not going to get the same amount of money. And as a result, your Part X will be much, much lower, so you're almost better off selling it privately, Auto Trader, Piston Heads, any of these places as well. Next up, shop around. That's pretty much common sense. These days, it's so much easier to try and either use brokers, either online or people who do this professionally, it's Palmdale, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, people like Palmdale and stuff that you can get in touch with, and they can do the shopping around for you if you can't be bothered, and you can still save a significant.
Yeah, if you with Palmdale, particularly if you search for at the car guru on Twitter.
Yeah,
he is Mr. Palmdale.
Yes, actually, we'll do.
And he's very approachable and very open to having conversations, even if you don't decide to. Follow up and use his service or the service that he offers. He's a really nice guy who we've been lucky enough to meet a few times and in non-car purchasing scenarios. So, I mean, he is a thorough petrol head as well. So,
yeah, total petrol head and a nice guy, and that's always a good start to recommending people as far as we're concerned. Next up, choose a petrol. Petrol's generally cheaper, and with all the fun around Dieselgate, then your running costs could end up being less if you're going to be keeping it for a little while. And last but not least, and this is my absolute favourite one on this, and you might have seen me discussing it slightly on Twitter the other day, is be friendly. Okay, one of the things is that if you head into any any car dealership looking for open warfare, then you'll probably get it.
Yes, you reap what you sow.
Yeah. But if you're friendly, honest with the sales folk, then hopefully they will play ball and be the same back. Of course, if they're not, then that's a pretty good sign that you should turn around and walk. But yeah, far more detail in Andrew's article on Motoring Research at motoringresearch.com. So there will be a link there in the show notes through to that. And that has us... Gosh, I got three in a row here tonight.
You did.
And that has us almost summed up. There is one last thing before we go. And that is for those of you who are about to head to the French Alps over the next few weeks, be careful. Okay? Because there are going to be large herds of cattle heading down the mountain. It's the seasonal movement of livestock between parcels, between pastures. And we've got to thank Drive Europe for this one, at Drive Europe on Twitter, for pointing this one out. They're a fantastic source of travel news if you're heading into Europe. But yeah, they're pointing out drivers have to cope not just with the animals, but with extra traffic as tourists flock to watch. The areas you want to be careful about is in Germany, it'll be the second, third, and fourth weekends of September. In Austria, Switzerland, southern Tyrol, in Italy, and in Bavaria are all going to be affected, though. So there will be long parades, and there will also be cows on the road. So if you are going, for example, on a driving holiday in the Alps, then be
careful.
Do
it now.
Please. Yes, do it now. Do it before the cows start standing in the road. I'm sure it'll be fantastically scenic and well worth some pictures, but also might be a little bit frustrating and may well mean that you have to wash the car.
Yes.
Which... pretty much round it up for this week, I think.
It does, actually.
We do seem to have found stuff to talk about. I was a little worried.
Well, I did witter quite extensively about the Discovery and my disappointment.
We did, yes. We wittered far more about the Discovery than the 2 minutes I thought it was going to get and deserve. But never mind. We'll deal with that. But yeah, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Facebook. And you can also get in touch with us via the contact page of www.motoringpodcast.com, which is the centre of our motoring universe. Please don't forget to leave a review or ratings on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. As I say, every single week, it really does matter. Andrew, best way to get in touch with you?
Best way would be via Twitter, where I can be found as @crackwindscreen. So, Alan, if people want to get in touch with you personally, how can they do that?
Twitter is the best, and it's @AJPBradley. We'll both be back next week, but until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.